Check it out now.
Live from the SiriusXM studios at the beautiful Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. Swanky studios all year long. Skill Alexander. It's the Megapod for the division round in the National Football League, as always, on the show from his... he doesn't want me to say that again. He's a little under the weather. Let's put it that way. He's playing hurt this morning. If you heard his riveting numbers game appearance this morning, you know that he is ailing. But he is rallying for a second show. Todd Wishnev, everybody, star of the Showtime docuseries. Action. What's happening, Toddy?
We have 5 6 o'clock college basketball games and 4 or 3 6:30 college basketball games. So we have to get this moving. Come on, let's go.
You have a heart out, is what you're trying to tell me? You
have a heart out.
Man's got a heart out. Just got hard something else too, probably. All right. Will Hill at not the Will Hill is the Twitter handle, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Willie, what's happening?
Gilly, I have seen people be asked for organs make less of a fuss than when you told Todd that the Megapod was 4:30 Eastern. So I was not as bothered by it. Todd was extremely flustered, but we move on. Should be a fun show.
Yeah. And your appearance this morning was energetic, and I appreciate that as always, just as a point of contrast. And this is one of our favorite guests. He does a regular season pod with us on the Megapod every year now. And we are lucky enough to have him on the playoffs. One of my favorite Twitter follows in the NFL, if not my favorite. You can follow him at CleveTA, that's CLEVTA. CleveAnalytics.com is where he does all his stuff. And he has a preview guide that he does at the beginning of every year that Kelly and I on a numbers game, we still reference for awards, the parameters that he provides for each award winner in the past, 20 of the last 21, 20 of the last 30, whatever the number is. But he has great parameters for those. It's CleveTA. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I think the last time I was on, I had to find my Wi-Fi was out, so I had to go find a local library.
That's right.
The Megapod. So back at home in my home office in a little better conditions. So I appreciate you having me on, though.
Appreciate you doing that last time. I know it's tough to multitask with the Dewey Decimal System and this podcast at the same time. It's a very, very fine effort out of you.
You look great, by the way. Boy, you really, really slimmed down.
I've lost 30 pounds since April. I appreciate you noticing, though.
You can totally see by the logo.
Have you really lost 30 pounds since April?
I have, yeah.
See?
I wasn't really overweight, but it was the highest I've ever been, and just more health conscious. And, I have 2 young kids, 5 and 2. So for the last couple of years, let myself go a little bit. Will knows about this when you start having kids, and it's just you don't have the free time and to eat healthy and work out. So finally made conscious effort to do it and lost about 30 pounds.
Claim he's
still has 4 kids, and he's as he just eats nonstop. He doesn't.
And also, he didn't let himself go. He did the next level after that.
Cleve brings up a good point. Those always leftover chicken nuggets or goldfish. Yeah. There's always there's always stuff to clean. There's always extras, which can be challenging at times.
And what are you going to do? Not eat them? I know
exactly.
How it goes. By the way, I met Cleve in live and in the flesh. Didn't look large at all to me. He looked great, man. Look, well, I don't know if that was mid weight loss.
That was about
at that point.
20. It was about 20 of the 30 pounds was already lost. Okay.
Isn't it amazing how I was able to figure that out, even though I have never seen the guy?
It's a great. You're an incredible man.
You should start calling me that guy, Oz Perlman.
Let's make everything about you. Why don't we do it that way?
Okay, let's start.
I think we did. Wait, and before we came on, did I hear you say you did a spot in Pittsburgh today? Is that what I heard?
No. I said I only came on to listen to Todd do a special occasion Pittsburgh Steeler accent because of in honor of Tomlin after all these years. I mean, we can't let the show go by without having special Yinzer Todd make an appearance. So
it's kind of funny Yinz bring that up, and that I'll tell you why it's kind of fun. I was at the grocery store, and the lady who says the Rooney's all shop there, she told me a real whopper of a rumor about Mikey Tomlin. I won't say it here, but I'm just telling you, that's a for reals.
Is he no longer going to be the coach? Was that what the big story was?
I thought already he was gone, wasn't he?
I know, but I thought that was the joke was.
Do you really have a rumor? Is there really a rumor, Todd?
Who knows what she knows? She doesn't. I don't know what she knows. But the Rooney's do shop there.
Oh, so that was a fake story that indicated and I thought he was making a joke about the past one that everybody knew, and you thought he had some real breaking news, and it was
it's a real story if she's right. I don't know that she's right, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, I've heard there are rumors. All year there are rumors about Tomlin. but you can go on the message boards and find out about those. I'm not going to discuss them on air.
Oh, really?
Ooh, yeah.
Maybe she's right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Are they? They're too sensitive to talk about here. I have to go to the message board. Okay.
Yeah, you could go. I'm not gonna. Someone mentioned it a few weeks ago, and I just kind of like, oh, I Googled it. You could Google it and see, or even go on Twitter and do a search for Tom.
This is a good podcast where we tease rumors and then we don't follow through with them. I love it.
Look, I don't think Yins should be sullying the name of Mike Tomlin and that. It's kind of wrong.
Mike Tomlin, as the Steelers look for their fourth head coach in history. It was Chuck Knoll, as you know this, Todd. I don't have to tell you, Yinzer. Knoll for 23 years, won 4 Super Bowls. Cowher for 15 years. Bill Cowher won 1 Super Bowl. And Tomlin for 19 non-losing seasons with 1 Super Bowl title as well, but also with the 7 straight playoff losses to close it, the last 5 by double digits.
It's amazing how one Super Bowl just changes. And it's obvious. Hey, you go from being a non-Super Bowl winner to one. But think of how, I don't know if you guys saw this, with Sean Payton acting like a jerk to one of the reporters. And some people say he might know the reporter. Maybe it was a little tongue-in-cheek. But Sean Payton, Tomlin, Harbaugh, these guys win these coin flip Super Bowls. Payton won a coin flip to get there. If they hadn't, you're looked at just completely differently. And then once you win one, it's just like you're beyond reproach. It's amazing the difference one game makes in these guys' legacy, reputation, how we discuss them, everything.
This is such a great point, because Sean Payton walks around like he's Joe Jackson Gibbs, like he's won 3 of these things, or 10 of them. You've won one, it was a coin flip, relax. Everybody relax with Sean Payton. Though, listen, he coached up Bo Nix far beyond anything I could have imagined. Before we get into our picks, we're only going to do 2, right? Divisional round, we only do 2 picks, right, Todd? By the bylaw?
Yeah,
2 by the bylaws. Okay, before we do that, and I want to get Cleve's thoughts on some of the awards, because he does the parameters in his pro football guide. So curious how he thinks these are going to go. But first, Dumbo of the Week. We have 4 candidates. 4 candidates. I'd like you all to chime in on which you think was the most egregious thing in all of these. 1, Sean McDermott for famously not kneeling and taking time off the clock so that the Jaguars had less time to work with in trying to either tie up that game with a field goal or win it with more. Instead, they put it in with 1:02 left. So Jacksonville had 59 seconds to work with. And we know what happened next. Trevor threw a pick, didn't matter. Sean McDermott, candidate number 1. I will chime in after you guys do on that, because I happen to think that was not a bad move. San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan went up 23-19. Decided to kick the extra point and not go for 2, and then Pinheiro ends up missing it. Didn't come back to hurt the Niners. Candidate number 3, Mike Vrabel. Will and I talked about this on Should Have Been More podcast. Mike Vrabel, who was so confident apparently in his defense's ability to stop the Chargers that he didn't even occur to him to go for 2 up 12 late in the game. He kicks the extra point to go up 13, and that was the final score. That was the final margin, 13. And finally, the aforementioned Michael Tomlin. Formerly the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who down 17-6, punts 4th-and-13 at the Houston 48 with 9:36 left. Those are your 4 candidates. Cleve, who's the dumbest of the dumb there?
So I definitely complained on Twitter on the first 2 pretty vehemently. So I'll guess between those 2, I'll go with the McDermott one. I thought that was just so obvious. I mean, your win probability, I don't have the exact numbers, but I think it went down once you decided to score, because it just makes no sense. First of all, with the 1 timeout, I mean, it was the last timeout. So you could have had 3 legitimate shots to get in the end zone and leave the Jags with, you know, under 30 seconds left. I went back and looked. Josh Allen from 1 yard away. What do you think his conversion rate is for this season and for his career? If you had to put a percentage,
85%.
1,476%.
Will is exactly right. He must have looked it up. 85%.
I did not look it up.
Yeah, and his career on 182 plays, he's 85% first down rate. This year is 89%. So you're talking about literally, I mean, it's automatic. Like, we watched that game, we know. And even if it was the worst case where there was a legal motion or legal movement, yeah, that would stink, but I still feel pretty confident with three plays that you'd be able to score. I just think that with Cam Little on the other side, perfect weather conditions, a guy who can, you know, literally kick it from 70 yards away, you just had to not score there. So I'll go with the McDermott.
Can I ask a question? Because you are no doubt correct. And we all in the moment knew that that was the optimal play. But putting myself in Sean McDermott's shoes, the flip side of that, of course, is, good God, if we kneel this, right? And it gets down to, what, 25 seconds? Because they had all their timeouts, Buffalo did. So at that point, it shifts from we're going to let you score to we're not going to let you score. And then God forbid, let's say you get stopped on one down, then you commit a false start, right? You know where I'm going. The downside, the human downside of that, because even though you are absolutely correct in the probability, I can see how the human downside of that totally informed his action.
And when did we go from...
That's the problem with any fourth down or any two-pointer is always the negative bias. You only think of the negative. You never think of the positive. Everyone's always like, what happens if you don't get it? Well, why is that the case when it's an 88% chance you're going to get it based on history here? So,
clearly,
you're risking anything you do, but...
No question. But in this case, it's not a week 13 game, right? This is people will remember you for the end of time if you blow this kind of thing.
I think that McDermott continually makes decisions like this, obviously with the Kansas City kickoff, like just he makes these decisions in the critical situations that are going to cost them seasons and Super Bowls potentially. And so I get what you're saying, but man, if Jacksonville comes down and kicks a field goal and then they win in overtime, I think he gets just as much criticism as if he decides to take a knee and then they don't, they fumble or whatever. True. Like, honestly, yeah. I think that he would get just as much criticism. So an interception there was such a bailout.
I almost
felt like I had the under, so I did not want overtime. So that was probably another reason why I was so upset that they weren't just taking it down. But
I had OT plus 600.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I had under 52, so I was like, man, I do not want OT here. And I was just furious that they even allowed that opportunity.
I don't want to belabor this anymore, because you're right about he would get guff also if he did it and then they got the field goal and then let's say they wanted an overtime. You're right. But I do think losing by inaction has a certain oomph to it that losing by action wouldn't have. If I take it even one step further, if that makes sense. Like the notion that I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying that would have been the max guff that he would have taken if he had not put it in the end zone and then they had lost.
He might have gotten fired in either case.
Yes, you're probably right.
I really think he would have had a chance to get fired, especially with Harbaugh out there.
The only other thing I want to point out is that if Todd had guessed 85%, we'd still be hearing about it. With Will, we just move on. Michelle, so we'll point that out as well. Todd, which one did you think was the worst of those?
Well, obviously the Vrabel one is ridiculous, because what do you gain from 12 to 13? I just don't even understand. And I see
and what
these
was
guys
his explanation? I
sent
you
time.
I sent you guys his explanation. I was more
was
confused
no
after he started talking about
he
eight. There was an explanation
the moment, right?
He started talking about 8 points and a field goal. I'll find it.
It was ridiculous is what his explanation was, and he should be embarrassed that he even answered like that. Now, I happen to like Vrabel, but there's zero answer for that. It's ridiculous. Now, by the way, the thing about the McDermott, I believe, and I'm not going to disagree with that, but it used to be, at least up until this week, we only did the thing falling at the one for a field goal, not for a touchdown. Now, and I understand the stats be what they are, but that has never been the issue in the past. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I'm going to push back. Mike Vrabel did this thing, because I was on the over in that game, Tampa, New England, earlier this year. It was before the half, so it wasn't end of game, but they got down to the one, and there was, again, it could have run the, he took a knee, essentially. At the one by and run it and ran down the clock so that they would essentially control the end of half. He didn't want Tampa to get the ball and come down and obviously get in field goal range. So he essentially had Drake May, go down to the ground. Now, funny thing is they didn't score until fourth down and they had to throw the ball to get in. I think it's a different case. We've got Josh Allen, who's just an automatic,
And you're saying it's 85% that if it's first and goal at the one, they get in. Well, that's what you're saying?
Not first and goal, just any 1 yard to go situation for Josh Allen. He's converted 85% in his career, 88.5% this year. Like, he's an automatic, like, especially when you get three shots, it's impossible for him not to get at one of those chances.
So if you're saying it like that, that's even more likely than a short field goal almost.
Yeah. I mean, he's automatic. Like, when do you see Josh Allen ever get stuffed on a sneak? And that's the other thing. Look, if you're telling me Aaron Rodgers in that situation, no, I score, right? Like, I try to score. But if it's a guy like Allen or, you know, the tush push with Philly, like, those are probably the two cases where I would, in this case, take the, you know, I would go down at the, you know, the half yard line or whatever it is, because it's just such an automatic. That was such a specific case for him.
Until you get a false start.
Well, okay, is the game, but the game's on. I mean, first of all, the odds of a false start are, you know, what, 5%? And then even in that case, you still have three shots to get 5 yards. Like, it's not like it's a death sentence. So I understand that part of it, but like, what is more likely, getting a false start and then not scoring on three shots, or scoring and then having Jacksonville get in field goal range with that much time left? I think Jacksonville in field goal range is way higher of a probability.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Than that,
so. I'm not disagreeing. I think you're 100% right that the win probably is that, but I do give some grace. The reason I don't choose McDermott,
it's a human element. I get it.
Yeah, give some grace. That's not a halftime. It's not an end of game in a regular season. It is a playoff game that, man, if you blow it that way, I just think it's not the rest of your career. I think it's the rest of your life when you walk around to the grocery store.
He's Bill Buckner. Yeah, he's like coaching Bill Buckner, even though he would have done the right thing. I'm with you.
Are these people thinking about that right now who are passing me in aisle 7 kind of thing? Will, what do you think is the worst?
I'm just going to read, I think it's a Vrabel one. I'll read the quote. I'll see if you guys can make sense of this. Question: how much of a consideration was a 2-point conversion after going up 15-3? Here is Vrabel's quote, and I just retweeted this. Yes, obviously some thoughts there. Just thinking that maybe we'd get a couple more possessions where the field goal could probably get us to 8. Could have easily done that. Proud of our guys. The sudden change all night. Situational football was really good. What the fuck does that mean? What does that mean? I mean, I understand all of those words individually. I just don't understand them all strung together like that. What is that?
He might as well have said halfway through, he might as well have been like, by the way, I love Arby's. You know, like something that has nothing to do with the answer.
By the way, we didn't. Yeah. None of us picked the, you know, Kyle Shanahan. Mario Cristobal was in the same exact position to go up 6 with a 2-point conversion. And he also kicked the PAT. And both times I was like, what is going on? Like, I understand, I mean, the odds of it even coming to play are very low, but there's no benefit to kicking the PAT. And of course, they miss it on their end. You know, they don't just give you points when you quote unquote take the points. Like, I always, that's the biggest pet peeve of mine from, you know, people on Twitter and analysts on TV talking about taking the points. Like, they just give you like, okay, ref, I want to kick a field goal. Okay, here are your 3 points or here's your 1 point. Like, that's not how it works. The chances of missing that kick are actually factored in these decisions, whether to go for 2 or, you know, kick the PAT, et cetera. So it was just interesting that in the same week we had this, you know, the same exact decision, and neither time they went with the optimal decision.
I'm going to go with Vrabel edging Tomlin. Vrabel, for all the reasons we stated, like there's just no reason not to do it. Will had the best line when I brought it up on Should Have Bet More. Will said, it was a great analogy. You said, it's the equivalent of like just not bothering to lock your doors at night.
You live in a safe neighborhood. You just, I don't need to lock my car. There's no break-ins in this area. We'll be fine. What was the second option, by the way? Tomlin, Vrabel,
Shanahan and okay. McDermott. Yeah.
So nobody, Ben Johnson going for it, 4th and 4 in his own 30, whatever. With
I completely forgot about that. First half, just panic mode.
A little ambitious from our boy Benny. A little ambitious, but all's well that ends well, I guess. That was a little much.
The reason that Tomlin is a second and not a first to me is because that was, by all indica-, I mean, look, 4th and 9 in plus territory. No, pardon me. 4th and 13 at the Houston 48, down 11 with 9:36 left. In any normal football game, I'm like, that is the biggest white flag wave. Are you kidding me? You're in plus territory. You have to go for this because you may not get this close ever again kind of thing. On the other hand, as I believe, Will, you pointed out very nicely on the thread, which I agree with, is the only reason that's not first place is because they were so bad against that Houston defense that it was almost more likely that the Houston offense would have committed a turnover deep in their own territory than it was for them getting that 13 yards. Like, it was just that kind of game. So I'll go Vrabel one.
Yeah. Tomlin has done that before. I remember the Browns played in the, against the Steelers during COVID. There was no fans.
The COVID playoff game, yeah.
Yeah, and it was the same thing. Like, it was, I remember, they were around midfield with Roethlisberger on fourth down, and he punted. I think he was down, like, I forgot what it was. I have to look it up, but he was down, actually, I'm looking at it now. It was fourth and one at their own 46. And what was the score? I don't even know what the score was.
It was a shootout game, too. It was like a 33-30 game where nobody could stop anybody. A stop was really hard to come by.
Yeah, they were down 12. Okay, so you're down 12, start of the fourth quarter, fourth and one at your own 46, and they took a delay of game and then punted. You know, he's done this stuff before. Like, as great of a motivator and CEO of men and all that he is, which he deserves a lot of credit. I mean, he gets he maxes out those players. He continually makes decisions like this. They're just
totally. Totally as part of his brand. Yeah. Normally I would go here, Todd, for you to do in game, but can I take a stab at this first before you? Because I think I think this one was one of the most obvious. It's rare that something works out so perfectly, but my handicap before the game was I loved Houston in this game against Pittsburgh. I didn't bet it though, because you know, Rufus said Steelers minus one. Dr. Bob had Steelers minus one. So I'm like, am I seeing something wrong? Because my whole thing was, you know, the reason that Aaron Rodgers was so good against Baltimore is they didn't put pressure on him. And 42-year-old Aaron Rodgers can kind of turn back the clock. But Houston generates pass rush without even having a blitz. They'll kill this guy. And so I didn't bet it pre-flop. But at halftime, with Houston only up one and C.J. Stroud just crapping the bed, the line was Houston minus 3.5 at that point. That, to me, was the most obvious in-game, as obvious an in-game as anything we've had all season. Does that corroborate? You think that as well?
That was just, again?
That Houston at halftime, up a point, and the spread was minus 3.5, I believe, at that moment, was the most logical in-game, as logical of an in-game play as anything all season long.
Yeah, I made the comment.
I took Houston in the second quarter, late in the second quarter, so I obviously have to agree.
Yeah, I said on the group thread when it was 7-6 and the Steelers couldn't move the ball and the Texans couldn't stop turning it over, I said, for as unpredictable as the NFL has been, this is like exactly like the most predictable game you could imagine. Houston not doing much, the Steelers doing worse. It was so ugly. We should have seen that one coming.
Yeah, for sure. Todd, you had another?
I had another. Oh, no, I didn't have another in-game. No, I'm glad you brought that one up. I mean, that one was pretty easy. The only other one that from the weekend that I really liked was the at halftime it was 10-7 I think in the Buffalo game, and I bought up to get the over at 40.5 because it just was like, come on, Buffalo sooner or later is going to explode and they're not going to be able to hold Jacksonville down. I mean, that one won so quickly, it was ridiculous. These games that are supposed to be overs and that go really low scoring in the first half almost always go over in the second half.
Before we do the picks, I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Cleve about I'll leave it open-ended. Whatever award you want to talk about, whatever award you think you're sure about or you want to make a case for, whichever direction you want to go with this, because you do such a great job with the parameters of the awards before the season. So I leave it to you to choose whichever way you want to go with that.
Yeah, I don't really have a strong take. I think everyone's given their takes over the last handful of weeks. I think it's kind of, you know, all the votes are in. But, you know, I would have voted May over Stafford, but I get why Stafford's kind of getting some love. I'm not sure if the all pro vote is an automatic X against May. We saw last year that these same exact voters flip the AP first team vote and the MVP. So it's, you know, not to say it's completely dead. I'm sure it's tilted towards Stafford, but you know, there is a shot that May can win it. I think the coach of the year is such an interesting race, because any other year, like four or five of these guys would have had strong cases based on historical parameters and just based on just, you know, watching in reality. So I personally would vote Liam Cohn just based on, you know, the combination of what he had to work with, just the improvement throughout the year. Taking a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who was, you know, people are talking about writing him off after this year, like the, you know, the most overrated quarterback in the league, overpaid, all those sorts of things. And he turned him into a top 10 quarterback, and that offense was pretty elite. So I thought he did as fine of a job as anybody. I mean, I had Kevin O'Connell winning last year. And Mike McDonald was the other guy that I had prior to the season for all the reasons that he actually proved out this year. But he already had a top 10 defense entering the year. So as elite as they were, that wasn't so much of a shock that, you know, they were so good this year based on how they ended last year. So, I mean, he deserves a lot of credit, but, you know, the top part of that team, or the best part of that team, was already pretty good entering the year. So I don't know. You can make a case for a lot of guys, but I think Liam Cohn is just purely based on how I see things, probably deserves it. I don't think he'll win, but I do think he deserves it. But I don't really have a strong opinion on any of the other awards right now.
If Shanahan were to win, would you be shocked?
Yeah, just based on how the season ended with that loss to Seattle. I don't think I know that obviously with the injuries and all sorts of things, you know, overcame all that. But, you know, just the way they ended against Seattle. I mean, that run at the end of the year, I bet Seattle in that last game. And that was purely based on, I thought that San Francisco was overvalued going into that game. They had played, teams like the Titans and the Browns, and just a lot of bad defenses to really inflate how that offense was looking. So I thought that was a little bit much. And then, you know, facing Seattle, they completely shut them down. So, I think he deserves credit, but, you know, just not enough to win it. So I would be surprised. And again, based on my, I guess, history, where it's kind of like the most improved team award, right, and it goes to a team that wasn't expected to really outperform. You know, they were supposed to win the division. They were a favorite to win the division. I think 10.5 was their win total. So it's not like, I know there was injuries during the season, but, you know, he did have McCaffrey for the entire year. He did have Purdy for, you know, most of the year. He had a really good backup in Mac Jones. So it's not like they had nobody. The defense stunk for the, you know, that's where all of the injuries came, and they were bad anyway. They just, you know, outscored teams. So I'm not sure he gets full credit for that. But again, it's really a really good year by him and a good case, but just not good enough.
It's going to be interesting to see with 50 humans voting on this, just 50 votes for all these awards, how splintered Coach of the Year will be. In other words, the winner will get how many first place votes? Could be like 10 for all we know. You know,
I mean, Vrabel probably ends up winning it, and anybody who doesn't vote for May will automatically vote for Vrabel, I think. I don't think you'll see a lot of double up there. So I think he'll be on the ballot and everyone's ballot, and he'll be one or two probably for all of them. So he'll win just because of that. He may not have a ton of first place votes, but he'll at least have, you know, top two or three that get him there.
All right.
Remember, Vrabel lost to the Raiders, and no one was shocked the first game of the year.
That's what, you know, that's what lost them the tiebreaker in the end. That game, common opponents with Denver, that was the game that caused them to lose the tiebreaker. That game cost them home field advantage throughout the playoffs if it were to come to a championship game at Denver. Okay. Best bets, division round, as Todd said earlier. There's only four games, so we're not going to hold people to three. But best two bets, your favorite two bets, side or total. Cleve, we start with you.
So I'm going to go to the Bears-Rams game. I'm going to take a total. Go with the over. Is it 48.5 or 49 right now?
48.5, yeah.
48. Not a key number. So I don't care really either way. But yeah, so obviously the weather is a big story here. And that number was 52 or 51.5 just a couple of days ago. So it's down about 3 points. It's supposedly going to be really cold in the teens. It doesn't look like the wind is terrible. They're saying, you know, 10 to 20 with some gusts, you know, 20 to 30. But, you know, in Chicago, it could be anything. And I know that game Saturday night, I was looking at that over and the number dropped. And I didn't take it because of all the concerns with weather. And it didn't turn out to be nearly as bad as, you know, they had talked about. So I'm not too focused on the weather. And honestly, these teams, these quarterbacks have such strong arms, two of the top five arms in the league. I'm not as concerned about things like wind here, but just on the surface, like these are two complete over teams. First of all, you have two elite play callers, maybe two of the three best in the league. So we know they're going to come with creative offense. Historically, I went back and looked and just said, you know, if I just matched up between Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, and then Ben Johnson, either as an OC or as a head coach, obviously with the Bears, what has happened in those games? And almost 70% of those games have gone over the total whenever any of those play callers are matched up, and they go over by about 4 points per game. We just saw, obviously, Chicago play, you know, with Ben Johnson played Kyle Shanahan in Chicago. in San Francisco in week 17, it was 42-38. I mean, that was a game that was lined at 52.5, and we ended up with 80. So, like, whenever you get these elite play callers together, you see a lot of offense. And just, you know, we know both offenses can score. They're both tied with the Jags in terms of highest rate of team totals that have gone over this year, 13 of 18 times for each of them. So, you know, they exceed market expectations continually. The Rams have been in complete shootouts for literally two straight months. They've gone seven straight games where there's been at least 51 total points in those games. And all but one went over the total by at least seven. So, like, these games are flying over. They're just, and obviously we saw it with Carolina. And there's two games against Carolina, one game against the Cardinals recently. So, like, these games are going over against some bad offenses, too. So I do think from that standpoint that both of these teams are exceeding market expectations. And then defensively is really, you know, the big story. The Bears have been a mirage all year, really relying on turnovers. If you exclude turnovers, they're 30th in EPA. They are, you know, they've got major issues at linebacker. They've been devastated all year with injuries, and they just suffered a major injury to TJ Edwards, who's by far their best linebacker. It's actually second on the team or on the defense in PFF grade, eighth lowest missed tackle rate among linebackers in the NFL. So, you know, that's going to be a big, big loss for them over the middle of the field. You know, McVay likes to target the tight ends. He'll go multiple tight ends with Parkinson. Hopefully if Ferguson plays, Higby, use a lot of motion to confuse those linebackers. So I think the middle of the field is going to be wide open. And then just the Rams, I think the undertold story of late is the Rams defense has fallen off a cliff. Since week 12, they've allowed the second highest explosive pass rate in the NFL. And again, this includes two games against Bryce Young and one against Jacoby Brissett, one against Kirk Cousins. Like, they're not facing the top of the top. Like, they're just allowing a ton of chunk yards. And the Bears are top five in explosive pass rate on offense. Even if the weather or the wind is a major concern, these teams are 1-2 in success rate on the ground, and top three in adjusted line yards generated. So their offensive lines create holes. So I think they're both going to be able to move the ball no matter what game state or conditions we're in. So I think we're in for a shootout. I don't think the weather, you know, is going to be that bad where it deserved this much of a downgrade from the open. And we've seen, I actually tweeted out earlier, just sub 20 degree temperature games in the playoffs, about 60% of those games have gone over the total. So it's not like, you know, that we see suppressed scoring to the extent of, you know, what the market thinks. So I'll take the over in this game.
Yeah, right now the weather forecasts, game time, or at least sometime during the game, single digits Fahrenheit, winds up to 16 miles per hour. So, you know how that goes. Could be worse. We'll see if it is worse. Weather forecast or weather forecasts. We'll see if that plays out. Low 6 degrees towards the end of that ballgame. So the over 48.5 for Cleve on that one. Todd Wishnev, ladies and gentlemen, not only the star of Showtime's docuseries Action, but as I said this morning, one of the top 10 players globally on the ATP Tour, over 300 pounds. Todd, what do you think you're ranked? Like 7th or 8th now? Something like that?
Something like that. Now, the thing is, Cleve, I think I mentioned this last week, and I said, you know, people don't realize how often the Rams get the 35 points. And Gilly was like, what are you talking about? Everyone. Really? Anyways, I still contend people don't realize. Do you remember that, Gilly, when I said that?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Their opponents get to 35.
No, the Rams get to 35 all the time. It's like,
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
No, I was making a joke that, like, people don't realize, you know, but what? Anyways, forget it. The point is that I kind of like what Cleve TA is saying, that the it's going to be hard to keep a Rams game down like that. I mean, the Rams are going to get their points, you know. And so, anyways, on my pick, I guess I'm going to go with the Bills. You know, I just think that the Denver's been a mirage the whole year. I mean, I just keep thinking of, like, almost losing to the Giants at home, 11-10 against the Jets, I believe was the score. They got so many games where, like, it's just very unimpressive. And now you're asking, I mean, Josh Allen, you know, it's freaking Josh Allen. You know, I just feel like sooner or later he's going to get over the hump. And this would be, you know, a perfect year for it, where there's no real, you know, dominant team. And especially because everyone thinks, oh, well, they stink. And they do stink on defense. Don't get me wrong. They do. But you know, I'm not impressed enough with this Denver team. I just, you know, they beat Vegas by 24-17. I mean, they beat Washington. You ever heard of this Washington team? They barely beat him 27-26, if anyone remembers that one. I took a nice keister shot on that game. I remember that one. That wasn't fun times. You know, they're just not that impressive to me. And I just feel like, you know, it's the playoffs now, man. It's the playoffs. And if, you know, we're talking about practice, we're talking about playoffs. We're talking about playoffs. And I just feel like it's Josh Allen and it's his time, you know, to come through this AFC. And I'm just not impressed enough with Denver. So just give me the Bills. What is it? Bills? What's the line now?
Right now I'm seeing plus 1.5.
Yeah, give me the Bills plus 1.5. That's crazy.
That was the one I guessed. I guessed Broncos -3 Sunday night. Will's like, oh, you're going to be shocked by this line. And I was. I couldn't believe the Bills were favorites. Now it's halfway towards me at this point, where my original guess was. That's about right, though. Broncos -1.5, I would say. Will, what's your first?
I'll go Bears +3.5. I hate doing this where I'm against the team 1 week and then I jump on the bandwagon the next week. If you're not there for the wedding, don't be there for the funeral. That being said, and it's funny because this is a 15-point game. We were talking on the group chat. I said, don't put the Packers into the next round yet. This is far from over because remember, I do have the Packers on the Megapod and I had the Packers more than in the Megapod. That was an expensive collapse. I still can't believe that meltdown from Green Bay last week. But I just think Chicago, this breaks perfectly for them. Stafford with a sprained finger, maybe he'll be fine. Maybe that affects a few throws here, especially playing in 0-degree weather. So you got an LA team playing outdoors. You got a quarterback with maybe a bad finger. You got the home team getting 3.5 points with that. That hook could be the key. If you're down 10 late, you could certainly see a backdoor situation. And the Rams, look, I know everyone consensus best team. That defense is not a championship level defense. Look over the last month, 6 weeks, they gave up 30 to pretty much everyone. Gave up 30 to Carolina twice. They gave up 27 to Atlanta in a loss. The Lions get 34 points, I believe, against them. They're giving up big time points every week, week in, week out. They are not good against the pass. I think you can move the ball on them. And Ben Johnson, obviously a well-respected offensive mind. So I will take the 3.5 here with the Chicago Bears.
Bears. +3.5. Yeah, that's still consensus. See some fours, but 3.5 is consensus. I am going with the Houston Texans +3 at the New England Patriots. For all of the people loving New England crushing the Chargers, I'm of the mindset that most of that was the Chargers offense. The Patriots deserve credit, but the side of the ball that I think I did get right was, hey, look, the Patriots actually played a team on defense, and they ended up with 16 points. They actually played a football team for once. Again, not just the easiest schedule in the NFL this year, not just facing 61% of snaps, as Cleve pointed out in his chart, against backup quarterbacks or quarterbacks ranked 30th in EPA or worse, but a team that had the third easiest schedule, according to DVOA, since 1978. So they play a team, they score 16 points. That's a Chargers defense. Chargers have a good defense. It's still not as good as the Texans defense. So, and they ended up against Justin Herbert, who, listen, part of it was offensive line injuries. Part of it was nobody was open downfield. So the Patriots deserve credit for that one. But part of it was also Justin Herbert. This will get lost. In the first half was wildly inaccurate in this game. So in comes C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud could not have been any worse the other night against Pittsburgh. I'm going to guess here that he plays better at New England. He can't possibly be that bad, right? Question mark. In this game, I think the Houston Texans defense is going to stymie the Patriots offense. I think Stroud will do enough. There is no Nico Collins, though I am aware of that as well. But I like the 3 points here. I think Houston wins this game outright, but I'll take the 3 points as my bet on this one. The Patriots magic carpet ride comes to an end, as does the Bears maybe later, but we'll see. All right, Cleve, your second one.
Yeah, so I'm going another total. I don't love the sides this week, so I'll be on the under in the Denver-Buffalo game. What do we have, 46 there?
We are at 46, yes.
Okay. So yeah, I was on the under in that Bills game last week for similar reasons. You know, we know that the Bills are a run funnel. Like they're a top 10 pass defense by EPA. But we know they're 31st against the run. So opponents should run the ball on them. I thought that the Jags would be stubborn, and you know they've been really pass heavy of late, so I thought that they would force the throw, which they kind of did. They were having so much success on the ground, but just decided to throw anyway. So that played into their hands. I think, you know, this time around, I do think Sean Payton will run the ball a lot more, which is fine to me as for an under guy, because Denver is not a great run offense. And so, you know, they'll have some success, but just, you know, I don't think they'll have enough where they can consistently score. And then you just look at Bo Nix. I don't trust him in a playoff setting. You know, this year, he's played a top 10 pass defense four times. He's played the Chargers twice. And this includes the week 18 when the Chargers played a lot of their backups, Texans and the Jags. And in those games, his success rates were just incredibly low, 24, 29, 35, and 45%. Denver did not clear 20 points in any of those games. And he just struggles against anybody with a pulse. So I think from that perspective, you know, either they try to force a throw, and I don't think he's going to be successful, or they just go run heavy, which is great for an under with a total like this. And then the other side of the ball, I do think that the Bills offense could struggle here. Obviously, Josh Allen's a Superman, but he's dealing with a bunch of injuries. He is really banged up. This is a short week, so he gets less rest, back-to-back road games. And the second half of that stretch, you're going to Denver in Mile High. So it's a really tough situation, generally speaking, for that offense. You know, the Broncos defense, while it's not, you know, number one or number two like it was last year, it's still a top 10 unit. And we've seen, as good as Allen is, the two best defenses he's faced all year, which you're pretty comparable to Denver, the Texans and the Browns. And those are his two worst games all year. He had three negative EPA games the entire season, and two of them came against Houston and Cleveland. Both games, Buffalo went under their team total. They scored 42 total points in those games, and those were tight games. So I think and obviously without all of their, a bunch of their top weapons, I mean, they've got nobody outside of Khalil Shakir. They had Keon Coleman and Brandon Cooks at receiver. Like, you're not going to really stretch the field at all against this Denver defense. So it's going to be a lot of run game, a lot of James Cook. It's going to be a lot of short throws. You saw a lot of screen passes last week to Shakir. I think you're going to see a lot of that again. Again, I think it's going to be short passes, you know, short completions, running the clock, or James Cook on the ground. And I think it's going to eat a lot of clock. So I think from both perspectives, this kind of leans more into a 23-20 type of game under the 46.
Under for Cleve. By the way, Dan Groeschel on Twitter. I'm shocked Sirianni hadn't gotten any love for Dumbo of the Week for the wasted timeout.
It's a good one.
With 45 seconds left, guaranteeing a loss if they didn't pick up a 4th-and-11. I noted that on Guessing Lines on Monday. I didn't think Kevin Burkhardt, Troy Aikman did nearly a good enough job of pointing that out, right? Nope. Like, it was like, okay, well, this is the game now that they've done this. They were like, well, they got to think it over. It's a big play. No, this is the end now because they called that timeout. They would have had a puncher's chance had they kept that timeout.
Yeah, Brady and Burkhardt, I think, right?
Yeah.
Brady and Burkhardt. Oh, Brady and Burkhardt. Who did I say?
I said Aikman.
I don't know. Oh, I did. You're right. Burkhardt and Brady.
I think Brady agreed with taking the timeout to make sure.
Yeah, I watched the replay of it Monday. Brady endorsed, like, yeah, got to do it. Got to, you know, got to talk it over here. Big play. He did it 100%.
Burkhardt also said in that game, he's like, ah, boy, the Niners, they were only down 3, but it felt like they were completely out of this game. And I'm thinking, I'm like, no, dude, the whole time I'm like, why aren't they up? What are you talking about? But anyway, that addition of Sirianni, because you're right, Dan Groeschel, you're right about that. That just means that we mentioned 6 coaches for possible Dumbo of the Week. Half the coaches literally made at least one like hugely questionable maneuver in those games. So that's pretty noteworthy to me that 6 of them kind of had a little choke in them. Some worked out, some didn't, some got away with it as well. Okay, Todd, you're 2nd and last.
I'm going to go with the same one that you did, Gilly. Texans plus the 3. You know, to me, that defense, that might be the best unit of all the units, you know, offense, defense, you know, of all the teams. That Texans defense is pretty damn good. I mean, that they, like you said, they get pass rush. You know, granted, New England's been great on offense all year, but against who? You know, you made the point that now they went against the Chargers and all of a sudden they came down to earth. You know, I don't see why the Texans can't, you know, bring them back to earth. Also, they've been getting every break possible, every break imaginable, you know, all these games over and over and over. You know, And also, I believe there was an old saying they used to say, you used to go a little bit like this, defense wins championships. You ever heard of that one? Defense wins championships. I don't even know if that's true anymore because it's become like it's such an offensive league. But I don't know. I just think that the Texans are the best, you know, the best unit out there, the Texans defense. I think they're going to, you know, they're going to find a way to figure out how to slow the Patriots down. And 3 points is not an inconsequential amount of points in an NFL game. We're not talking about 1.5 here, 2. We're not even talking about 2.5. Or if you remember correctly, I told you of a lot of different scores last week, 16-14, 17-16. And when you do plus 3, now all of a sudden you've got a whole bunch more scores that can come in, 21-19, 17-15. It's a lot of scores can keep you inside that plus 3. And I won't tell you any more scores. You can figure them out on your own. But the bottom line is 3 is a lot of points, especially in a game where you're not, this is going to be just an absolute, you know, bloodbath probably if they play it the way Houston typically plays. So 3 to me sounds just a little too much to ask the Patriots. Also, it's the Patriots' first time in the playoffs. Let's be realistic. Most of the time, these teams that come out of nowhere, they don't just sprint right to the Super Bowl. They have like a little taste of action. They get a little taste, and then maybe the next year they come back for a little more than a taste. But I don't know. I just think Texans plus 3. It's just too many points.
Excellent math on that whole capsule you just gave. Great.
There's
math.
Another one. 19-16 gets you a push. That's a push number. There's a lot of numbers.
Oh, there is.
Drake May and Caleb Williams trying to match what Jaden Daniels did in his rookie year. They're trying to match it in their sophomore year, albeit on their home fields. Just remember the great Jaden Daniels from last year. That's what they're trying to get to. It's a little editorial. Sorry. Will, go ahead.
Should have went with this one of my picks last week. I gave it out on other shows, but didn't use it on the Megapod because why would I want to give her a winner on here ever? I'm going to, as you guys are giving scores here for Texas
Patriots.
Will, before you go,
it's impossible for you to go 1-2 this week.
We'll see. I'll go under Texans Patriots. And I talked about this on the Megapod, Gilly. I'd prefer like a first half under or first quarter under because I think the angle here is being conservative early. Coaches hate turnovers. All coaches hate turnovers, but especially defensive coaches. They want to, you know what, let's not lose the game before we worry about winning it. And just look back at last week. Stroud fumbled 5 times and threw an interception. May fumbled 2 times and threw an interception. I think all week Vrabel and D'Amico Ryans preach ball security. Let's not turn it over. Let's not make an early mistake. You know, we don't worry about the Texans scoring too many points. Let's not give them free points. The Texans say, hey, we got a great defense. Let's not give them free points. So I think you see a little bit of a field position game early on. And anytime you're worried about not turning it over, you're just a little more cautious. So I think we'll see that kind of game. Plus, the Texans are just a perfect under team. They play really good defense and they are limited on offense. You're dealing with New England outdoors here this time of year, which is good for an under two. So I know there's not a lot of meat on the bone. It's hard to stay under these low, low totals, but I'm going to stay with a Houston under here. I think, what do we got, 41 or so? So that's my second play, Houston, New England under the total.
Is it 9 or 7? 9 or 7 or 7.5 now? What are you guys saying?
41.
Depends
and a
what
half
you mean? Like.
Is it both? I mean, I got 7.5 earlier in the week in a bet, but what is it right now? Because if it's 7 consensus, I'm not going to take the Niners. If it's 7.5, I would.
Willie, I like first quarter under in that Texans game.
That's what I went with on Megapod. Did you listen? Did you hear me say that, or you happen to like it too? Yeah, it's not.
No,
I'm with you.
I think like
it's conservative early.
Yeah,
that might be good. No score first 6 minutes. That kind of game too. It might be.
And
be
like tie might be good also, Willie.
Yeah, we'll give him 7.5. I know you like the Niners. We'll give Gilly 7.5. He's such a nice guy.
Thanks, appreciate it.
I would like to just question. We should review that.
What's the review? What does it say? 7 consensus?
No, review whether you're a nice guy.
Okay. 7.5. I'm going to be the first to say this is more like a Bears pick from last week, where I prefaced it by saying, just call it a hunch. I think the Bears magic carpet ride, I said last week, lasts for one more week. Just a hunch here that the Niners get inside the number. And I don't have a really great case for this because Kittle is gone now. But Fred Warner, limited practice yesterday. So that's something, I guess. 85% of Fred Warner is better than 100%, maybe, of those guys that were in last week. That was unbelievable. The Niners' quartet of linebackers who had barely played at all really comported themselves well last week in a way that I don't think anybody expected. I actually expect him to show up this week as well. Talk about Eric Kendricks, Curtis Robinson, Garrett Wallow, and Jalen Graham, along with maybe Fred Warner. So I think they keep this in the number. And I think Brock Sisson, this is famous last words, because we all had Brock Purdy for MVP at one point. Was it last year or the year before? I can't even remember.
The year before. I am going, oh, dear.
In Brock, I trust, and in Sam, I don't. I think the Niners stay within the number here. I think this is a close game. I don't think it plays out at all like that last Week 18 game where Trent Williams didn't play except for the very first play. I think Trent Williams is a massive factor that people don't necessarily quantify. So I'm going to say Niners plus 7.5, which I bet on Monday morning as my second.
Actually, that was going to be my second pick too.
Oh, Todd and I are simpatico. Todd, who finished runner-up famously this year in the Megapod behind the guest chair.
But okay. Did in fact beat you and Willie.
That's a division point. It's a division win. Okay. Usually we do the last two questions. I will substitute one question, so we'll still do the last two.
So we're one skipping teasers, right? We're not doing teasers.
Oh, are we doing teasers?
I don't know.
Do we have a teaser? It's not mandatory, but does anybody have a teaser that they're playing?
Seahawks Bills.
Seahawks Bills?
If they're 7.5, they're 1.5. Yeah, go down to the 1.5 and go up to the 7.5. Those work for me.
Yep. Yep, makes sense. That's the most obvious ones anyway. Seahawks, Bills, both on Saturday. Okay, final two questions. We're not going to do the biggest favorite, most likely to lose outright, because there's only one of those. But we will do, if you had to bet three of these sides and passed on one, Cleve, which is the one you like the least on the side?
I think Buffalo, Denver. I think it's a true coin flip. I can make the case for both. It's like, do I want to bet Josh Allen with an inferior defense and zero weapons and he's on short rest and banged up, or do I want Bo Nix? I don't know. So that's the game I just don't have a strong enough opinion on.
Dottie?
The Rams game, I want to say the Bears are going to end it, but I mean, end their huge run. But then on the other hand, you got this freezing cold weather for LA. I don't want any part of that.
Willie?
7.5 seems like a lot for Seattle, like you guys mentioned, but we've seen this before where the wild card team comes in to the team that's rested in San Francisco. Remember, played on Sunday. The game ended, 7:30, 8 o'clock Sunday night. Seattle's been off for a couple weeks. We've seen this before where the rested team comes, is in a position where they just dominate the team that's gassed and winded. I remember the Vikings upsetting the Saints in 2019, and they had a similar scenario. They had to play the following Saturday, and they just had nothing. They got run off the field. I could see that scenario, but I don't trust Darnold enough to lay it, so that's a pretty easy pass for me.
You know what? I've heard like three people say that this week, and then my comment after is like, yeah, but that's the exact same scenario for Buffalo as well, but no one ever seems to bring up that
good point.
Against the Broncos. It's for me, Todd and I are in lockstep. It's the Bears and the Rams. I could see the Rams blowing them out. I could see the Bears with that weather winning even at this point, certainly keeping it within the number. So that's the one for me. And then the final question is the most basic of all of it, but I figure we do this every week when there's this many teams left, because I want to see how wrong we are the whole way through. Cleve, who's in the Super Bowl?
So I have before the playoffs, I just filled out a bracket and I kept coming back to Houston and the Rams, and I took a 30-1 ticket for that matchup. I'm just going to say that just because I think, who was it that I think Todd hit on it, that the Houston defense is probably the most elite single unit in this playoffs. And I think the Rams offense is maybe number two. So I'll just go with, I'll just stick with that. I think whoever wins this New England-Houston game is going to get to the Super Bowl on one side, and then I like the Rams on the other side. So Houston and the Rams for me.
I agree with Cleve. Rams to Houston.
Wow.
Todd? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't even want to guess. It's ridiculous. I still think it's the Bills' year, though.
Just because no Mahomes, it's his year to do it.
I just feel like it's storybook. You know, it's like Bills every single year they don't make it. And then finally the one year they get a chance and then they make it when they don't.
Chicago Cubs 2016-ish kind of vibe.
Yeah.
A little Akeem Olajuwon when Jordan's not around kind of thing.
Yeah. And OJ Simpson.
I'll go Seahawks Bills. Wouldn't it be typical Vikings? They tell their quarterback who gives them this great year to go kick rocks. I had no problem with that. He turns around, he's in the Super Bowl the next year. That would be perfect Viking. So fitting for the Minnesota Vikings.
Seahawks up Brosmer.
We got Brosmer. Seahawks Bills would be so uninteresting to me. I'd be like, oh great, we got 2 weeks to talk about Seahawks Bills. That'll be fun. Particularly the Bills side being so one dimensional on it. But by the way, Bills down to three wide receivers. Well, Curtis Samuel could play this week, so maybe it's four.
Isn't that a little overrated though? When you got two tight, you got Knox, you got Kincaid, and you got three receivers. I mean, how many guys? What do you need? A fourth, fifth receiver? Like, how many do you need? I get that's unusual, but isn't that a little overblown?
Well, it might be. Also, someone made the point today on Twitter, and I think it's right because it's a very Dr. Bobish kind of thing, which is you're not going to really rely on your receivers ever that much with Josh Allen necessarily right. as your number one thing. And so it kind of mitigates Patrick Surtain a little bit, his greatness. So there's that kind of handicap as well. So yeah, I'm with you. Maybe a little overblown. All right. We've done all we can do. Cleve TA on Twitter, CLEVTA, at Cleve TA, cleveanalytics.com. His pro football guide. I assume you're doing another one next year, Cleve? Yes?
Yeah, I'm getting burned out, but I always say that. And then when it comes to the offseason, I get reinvigorated, so I'm sure I'll have something again.
Well, totally appreciate you doing this. We always have fun when you're on. Todd Wishnev at T Wishnev. Action still available on Showtime. The college basketball group is closed, but he's still doing his thing there. Maybe he'll open it again one day. And Will Hill, Shoulda Bet More podcast. When's the next one? How many times a week?
Had one Wednesday, Friday. So they're Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And your most recent guest is?
I had Gilly Alexander on Monday and Dave Ross on Wednesday. I mean, that is Ruth and Garrick back to back. That's as good as it gets.
Wow.
Why didn't you promo his new podcast, which is like a spinoff? Should have eaten more.
There it is. We'll leave on that. Cleve, Todd, Will, thank you. Thank you for listening. Good luck with all your bets in the
division. Leave a review.
Oh, yeah. Rate, review, and what's the other one?
Subscribe.
Rate, review, and subscribe. You got to do that one first. Subscribe. Rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks for listening. Good luck with all your bets this weekend.